Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello, I'm Scott Soshnick.
And I'm Evan Novy Williams, and this is the first U.S. Fight sports business podcast, The Sportacast.
All right, Chatri, we like to judge Evan's opening. All right, sometimes he brings it, like he's very literal. Sometimes he gets creative. What'd you think of that opening, Chatri?
I thought it was okay. Could have been a little bit more bigger, given the magnitude of the fact that we're bringing the entire world to America for the first time, for American fans to see the very best martial arts on the planet across multiple disciplines. And American fans are in for a treat. They've never seen anything like this before. So maybe, Evan, you can try again.
No. Chatri Sichatong, founder, CEO of One Championship. I'm going to give you the opportunity to play Evan right now, if we will, all right? So I'm just going to do a hello, I'm Scott Soshnick open, and then you give me the best promo that you want with the enthusiasm. Show this kid how to do it. All right, so again, this is the way we do it. We're coming in 3, 2, 1. Hello, I'm Scott Soshnick.
May 5th, the biggest thing to happen in combat sports in American history. One Championship, the world's largest martial arts organization, is coming to Denver, Colorado, live on Prime Video at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Come watch the greatest World Championship martial artists on the planet across mixed martial arts, Muay Thai, kickboxing, submission grappling, you name it, the very best in combat sports, here and now, May 5th.
That was
Thank
better.
Eben.
That was
Eben.
Better.
Yeah. Did we learn the lesson finally of what promotion really is? There's performative
better.
And promotion. And by the way, Chatri, I got to tell you, just the whole like just everything about a submission ending, it sounds so unpleasant. Like, I want to see how fast am I begging. Like, how do you submit? Do you like raise your hand, tap? What do you do to submit?
Tap.
You tap. You can verbally tap, say I tap, or you can tap physically. So some submissions, you know, if your hands and arms are incapacitated, then you would have to verbally tap, right? Say I tap. But, or you would do with your foot. You know, you basically smack the cage with your foot. But yeah, submission grappling is definitely not for the faint of heart.
So if I, for instance, for like, let's just say I was in so much pain and I lost, you know, all sense of where, and if I just said, mommy, does that count?
I think that might count. I think the ref would stop in if you said mommy.
If you pass out, that also counts. Yeah.
You cannot. If you can't tap, you can't say. If you just pass out, that's out. But hey, we got good news. I mean, and you did a great job on the promo there, Chatri. But we have good news and bad news. The good news is that your event sold out in like no time, right? That's the good news.
Yeah, several
the
weeks bad ago, news, zero marketing. Very surprising,
right, okay.
Actually.
Okay. So the bad news is, with zero marketing, your event sold out in no time. Maybe you underestimated the power of what you got here.
No, for sure. I mean, I'm kicking myself, you know, because my team had told me, Chatri, let's do it, you know, in the largest stadium possible. Let's go, you know, let's go very big, 20,000-seater, 30,000-seater. And I just didn't want to do that. I just thought, look, you know, we're brand new in America. We're a nascent brand. We might be known amongst the hardcores or the martial arts practitioners here, but we just, you know, let's be very real. No one knows about One right now across mainstream America. And so I thought, hey, let's just go for a mid-sized stadium and hope for the best. And yeah, I was shocked. We announced May 5th, Denver, Colorado, announced a few bouts. And within a week, we were 70% sold out. And then, yeah, several weeks ago, we completely sold out. So I was shocked. I mean, you know, I guess it's more popular than I thought, or one is more sought after by fans in the States than I thought.
And this is a 7,000 seat arena, roughly, outside of Denver. And how do you? I'm curious. How do you choose Denver? What makes that the spot? You want to do an event. You're huge in Asia. You want to do an event in the U.S. How do you decide what city, let alone what venue to start in?
So Colorado has historic significance in the sport of mixed martial arts for America. In 1993, UFC held its first event in Colorado. But equally important, I think. So that's kind of if you want to say the birthplace of American mixed martial arts. Although the sport of mixed martial arts was originally born in Asia in 1986 or 1984 in Japan. But the American birth was in Colorado. So we thought that's kind of a significant moment for now the world's largest martial arts organization to come to America and pay our respects to Colorado. At the same time, the Colorado Athletic Commission was very aggressive in approving the global rule set so that we could come in with multiple disciplines of martial arts, in the same night. So what you will see is basically Olympics of martial arts in a single night, all the different disciplines, right, under different rule sets.
That's different from UFC. For fans, listeners here that are familiar with watching a UFC event, that is the same rules for every bout, essentially, right, outside of the round length. You're talking about a different disciplines and different rule sets for each fight.
Yes, it's literally like watching the Olympics. You know, with the Olympics, you'll watch a 100-meter dash, you'll watch the high jump, you'll watch the 100-foot dive, whatever it is, or you'll watch, boxing or basketball. But what you know in the Olympics is this is the very best in the world, right? The very best on the planet. And you're there to enjoy watching the very best of the best go at it for the highest stakes in the world, which is the Olympic gold medal. It's the same thing with ONE and why we've, lit the world on fire. Literally, our viewership metrics and organic video views and digital video views, is much significantly larger than the UFC's. I know UFC's big in America, but in terms of global viewership numbers, in terms of global organic video views on TV or on digital social, we're significantly larger than the UFC. And that's something I think American fans don't know. But when we come to America for the first time in Denver, Colorado on May 5th, live on Prime Video at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, American fans will be in for a big treat. And here's the thing. We're not coming in. This is our first event, and I want to keep it small. But the plan, with Amazon is to do at least once a month on ground in the U.S. And make it a real part of, mainstream combat sports calendar for the U.S.
How do you do that? I mean, really, I know it sounds like a very basic question, but it's not that simple. What are the steps? What's the plan? How do you make it a mainstream part of the American sports fans' consciousness?
So I think one good thing is, mixed martial arts and UFC have done a phenomenal job. And then, genuinely, the sport of mixed martial arts is in mainstream consciousness, and so is UFC here in America.
So it's just a brand issue?
No, I think, it's like everything in life, right? You have to start off with the core, hardcore fans, the most knowledgeable fans. And I think of it as concentric circles. You have to appeal to the martial arts practitioner, to the martial arts gyms and schools in the community. Then you have to, the next outer layer, you have to appeal to the martial art, the combat sports fans, the folks like boxing and kickboxing and MMA and UFC. And then you've got to appeal to the sports fan after that. And then you've got to appeal to mainstream. And there's obviously a marketing plan behind each of those. And we've been able to light up entire countries all over the world. As I said, our viewership numbers, according to Nielsen, is significantly larger than UFC's globally in terms of TV, digital, and social viewership numbers. And this is all, you can see the last year Nielsen came out with the 2022, I think, sports media consumption industry report. It was naming the top 20 largest global sports media properties and all that data. And we were very surprised, to be honest. We knew we were growing very fast. We knew we're probably bigger than some properties out there, but we had no idea that we would be, top five in the world, alongside NBA and Champions League and EPL and whatnot. That was very, very
surprising. What's your breakdown in terms of TV, streaming, and social?
So TV viewership, just to give you perspective, is around 400 million, according to that Nielsen Industry Report, per year. 400 million fans, unique reach. And that compares with, I think, 259 for UFC. And that compares with, I think, NBA was, I think, 500 or 600 million. Just to give you perspective. And then our organic video views on digital and social were a few billion. I can't remember the exact number. I think it was 3 or 4 billion. And that was number two in the world behind NBA. So, yeah, it's across all platforms. It's TV, YouTube, social media, et cetera, et cetera. And that excludes China, by the way. In China, we're huge. But I think Nielsen only did this report only on the world without China, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. They did it on, for example, social media was only Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, and I think TikTok. But, you know, as you may or may not know, in China, they have an internet firewall, and they have their own platforms called Douyin, Kuaishou, Weibo, et cetera. Yeah.
And one of the things I always think about with combat sports, especially here in the U.S., is that they seem to kind of live and die by the athlete themselves. If there is a very compelling UFC star like a Conor McGregor or a Ronda Rousey, a lot of people want to tune in. And if those people are not fighting or there's no superstar, the fights can be amazing, but a lot fewer people tune in. I'm curious if you think that you guys have a different approach, or is it, or do you guys just have massive international stars as well?
Well, I think, you know, it's like any other sport, though, right? I mean, how many F1 drivers do you really know? Lewis Hamilton, right?
A couple, maybe one. Yeah.
Right. Basketball players, you know, how many people do you really know? I mean, if you go around the world, people might know Michael Jordan. People might know a few other people, but not many more. Tennis, Roger Federer or et cetera. Every sport, there's going to be... For every sports league, there's going to be a handful of names that truly transcend the sport and become global and historic over time. But I think what, again, props to the UFC, what they've done a great job is, you know, UFC has built an incredible homegrown brand in the U.S. where Americans genuinely, you know, love the UFC and watch the UFC. So I don't know if I subscribe to, hey man, it's only the biggest stars. Yes, I agree with you. Mainstream wise, you know, if you want to get the whole country to watch, just like F1, right? It takes Lewis Hamilton to race for the whole world to want to watch.
But it also took a reality show to get Americans to want to watch.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, you know, Americans love, I tell you what's a little bit different about the American market versus the rest of the world. And again, we're getting to know because we're entering America for the first time. Americans love trash talk and they love, you know, and
we don't get the ugly American stereotype without a reason there, Chitri.
Well, look, you know, I lived in the States for over 18 years. So I have a lot of love and respect. You know, I lived the American dream. I came here when I was dirt poor and I left, you know, to be able to, with enough financial resources to be able to start one. So I'm eternally grateful to the States for my education and for my work experience here. And I do get American culture. So I wouldn't subscribe to the dumb American, as you or ugly American, as you put it. I just think that American culture is a little bit more confrontational than other cultures might be around the world. And it's an okay thing. It's just every culture has its own kind of idiosyncrasies or uniqueness. And American culture, I think that's why in the hockey games, you know, people want to watch the fights. They don't want to watch the hockey. They want to see, you know, the enforcer come out and
all right,
enforce.
You're talking to a bully, hockey right? guy here, Chetri. You're talking to a hockey guy. You know, my son's a big hockey player. We do that a lot on this show. I want to see bigger rings and less fighting. I want to see the better players, but that's just me.
I'll take the fighting. Okay,
yeah, everybody else will take the fighting. I get it. I was at Madison Square Garden last night for the Devils and the Rangers. Believe me, I know what the bloodlust that crowd wanted.
I'm curious that so knowing what you just said about how American fans, American sports consumers may be a little bit different, how different is a one championship event in the U.S. either from content or from promotion versus what you're doing in a company like Thailand?
It's pretty much the same thing. You know, our fundamental belief is that what makes a great enduring sports property is values, heroes, and stories. So values that every family can celebrate with their kids and grandkids watching the content, watching the live event. Heroes that genuinely inspire entire countries and inspire the world, and the stories behind them, the stories of overcoming adversity, tragedy, poverty, whatever it may be. That's the formula that one has. You know, we rest on that. Values, heroes, and stories. If you look at the Olympics, why is it that when any country wins the Olympic gold medal, it's such a huge deal? Yes, it is the Olympic gold medal, but it's the values, heroes, and stories behind it, right? It's the values of Olympic sportsmanship, of knowing you gave it your all and didn't cheat, and et cetera, et cetera. And if you did lose, you expressed sportsmanship and honor and respect. It's the heroes that, like, literally entire countries get lit up. And if obviously, the stories behind them. So obviously America has tons of Olympic gold medalists, but, you know, it definitely uses the Olympics to showcase why America is the greatest country in the world, right? How is it that a country of only 330 million people out of a population of 8 billion, how is it that America always has the most gold medals in the Olympics, right? That is a bragging right, despite being, I mean, China's 1.4 billion people. India's 1.4 billion.
I can tell you what it isn't. It isn't that the government pays for it. I can tell you that.
Yeah. well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. That's so remarkable. And I have so much love and gratitude towards the U.S. It's, you know, my 18 years here were truly some of the best years of my life. I learned so much about, you know, the pursuit of your dream and the American can-do spirit, the entrepreneurial culture, the embracing of immigrants, you know, the history of the country. How is it that you have Silicon Valley, you have Wall Street, you have, I mean, almost every industry that requires massive intellectual property and innovation, America leads, right? So obviously we have our work cut out for us, you know, coming to the States. There's so many incredible sports properties, whether it's NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, NASCAR, you name it, obviously UFC. A lot of respect and admiration for everything that's been. But the way I view myself, I'm a student of the game. America is the most sophisticated, the largest sports market in the world. I want to learn from the very best.
Yeah, but what a time, Chatri, if you have to take on this task of ingratiating yourself to a new fan base. What a time. 10, 15 years ago, you had to rely on others to tell your story. Now, with tech and social, your athletes can go direct. They can tell their stories. You can go through your channels and tell those stories. It's a lot easier to disseminate all that information that you said is sort of the centerpieces of what makes sport great.
Well, I mean, that's my point, right? It's when Nielsen came out with that industry report on the top 20 largest global sports properties, I was genuinely surprised that we're number 5 in the world. And I reflected on how is it that we're number 5 in the world? And it goes exactly to what you say, Scott. It's that we were born 11 years ago. I started one 11 years ago. And I got very lucky. Why? The rise of social media. Think about where Facebook and Instagram and all these guys were 11 years ago. Think about where the smart mobile device was 11 years ago. How many people had smartphones, okay? And if you think about technology revolution, the world is more connected than ever before. You put out a piece of content, it goes viral around the world. You can genuinely get fans, millions of fans around the world just by posting great content. In our case, we now have over 70 million fans on social media, which is astounding to me. And half of it is outside of Asia. Even though we've never thrown an event in America, we have millions of American fans already. So I agree 1,000% with you. It has... The world, the digital economy has really unified the world, and made it possible to create a global property in 11 years. If you look at history, right, to create a truly global property, it takes anywhere from 70 to 100 years. You look at F1, it's 70 years old. You look at WWE, which is not a sports property, but it's, you know, an entertainment media property. If you look at UFC, which is 30 plus years old. If you look at NFL, 100 years old. If you look at EPL, 100 years old. It takes a long time. But why did it take us only 11 years? I'd like to say, oh, we're so amazing. No, we got very lucky. We were born in an era in which social media exploded and smart mobile devices exploded. Basically, content selling became democratic. We have 70 million followers because we put out great content, because fans love our fights. They love our heroes. I can't imagine how hard it was for Bernie Ecclestone to build F1. He had to go city by city and convince them to put a racetrack, get these million-dollar cars. I mean, it's mind-boggling what he did over 70 years.
Yeah, I was going to say the last year, January 2022, you guys raised $150 million at $1 billion valuation. Two big names leading that.
$1.4 billion US dollars.
Two big names in there, Guggenheim, which American baseball fans very familiar with the Dodgers, and then a group out of Qatar. Walk us through those two groups, what they bring to the table, and then I certainly want to get into what you guys are doing in the Middle East as well.
Yeah, so in the history of the global combat sports industry, you know, we've raised the most amount of capital, $500 million. I think there's only $2 billion properties, UFC and us. You're right. We do have a bunch of American investors. We have Sequoia Capital out of Silicon Valley. We have Guggenheim out of LA. We have Vulcan, or now called Circano. Vulcan owns Seattle Seahawks.
That was Paul Allen's venture firm. Yeah.
Yeah. Paul Allen's, exactly. So we have several big, you know, blue chip U.S. American investors, U.S. institutional investors, rather. We're very, very fortunate. So they've obviously been very helpful to us in our U.S. entry as well. I don't know. I think they see the magic in one's trajectory and what we're doing, and they believe that we can, you know, be amongst the most valuable sports properties in the world. So we might be top five in the world in terms of viewership on TV and social metrics, social viewership and digital viewership. But in terms of valuation, we're still a baby, right? I mean, NFL is valued at $100 billion. NBA is valued at $70 billion. F1, I think, is valued at $20 billion. You know, we're at $1.4 billion. So we have a ways to go. But I think the U.S. market is going to be a key to our future valuation.
And I think if I remember correctly, UFC was around 12 in the recent tie up between UFC and WWE. You mentioned some business metrics that you guys are outpacing them globally on a media scale. Do you think of those valuation differences largely as what you're saying about the strength of the U.S. kind of commercial sports market? Is that a product of them doing a lot of their business in the U.S. and you guys doing a lot of your business elsewhere? What do you think about the differences there?
First of all, UFC is 30 years old. We're 11 years old. Okay, so the fact that we are approximately the same size on some metrics, and we're larger in other metrics, and they're larger in some metrics, I mean, it makes sense because they're 30 years old. We're 11 years old. And so we haven't had as much time to catch up on revenues as, let's say, the UFC. But also, I agree, UFC was born in America, which is the largest sports market by far. So I think, if I'm not mistaken, in terms of total global industry sports revenues, the U.S. market alone accounts for 80%.
That's amazing.
So that is a staggering number. So again,
why Barcelona, Real Madrid, and every EPL team come here every summer.
And that's why we're coming. That's why the American market is very important to one. You know, we've obviously arrived as a global property, and now it's really to open up the U.S. market So I think it's, again, really exciting times. You know, we have our work cut out for us. You know, the American market is, again, the sports fan is so spoiled. You know, even collegiate ball is unbelievable, right? So the level of talent, the level of production quality, the level of everything, you know, American sports properties are the mecca of global sports.
you need a little tailwind here, Tristram. Easy tailwinds here. Who are the big influencers who are into one and can help you out here? Who can put it on their TikTok channels? I saw what Travis Scott did for burgers and the D'Amelio sisters did for Dunkin' Donuts drinks. Who can help you out with this promotion?
You know, I'm going to have to defer to my social media team, but I a few big name rappers are fans of one. Wiz Khalifa.
That'll do it.
Yeah, Wiz Khalifa. There's a handful of a really big mainstream hip hop artists that are big fans of one that have organically we didn't know they started posting stuff about one, but again, it's still early days. Our brand is nascent. It's going to take time. I don't think this is going to be a 1 year thing. I think it's going to be a multi-year thing. It's going to be, you know, I hope within 3 to 5 years one becomes a household name, at least in the combat sports, amongst combat sports fans, amongst the sporting fans in the U.S. Obviously, in the global combat sports scene, we're already a household name. But again, it's very different to be a household name in the general sports fan and then obviously the mainstream.
Hey, Chitri, we're 3.5 years old here at Sportico. I understand what it means to be a new brand and building. You know, we too talk about concentric circles. We have hit the red dot on the dartboard. Those hardcore sports business professionals, we're there. Now we're working about those outer rings, same as you.
But before we let you go, I do want to make sure that we do talk about what you guys are doing in the Middle East. I know you have a partnership in Qatar, just hosted the World Cup there. There's so many sports properties. Almost all of them are looking at the Middle East in some capacity as another growth opportunity. Walk us through what you guys are doing there and from a business standpoint, kind of what the opportunity is that you see in Qatar and that region moving forward. I know that it's an area that loves combat sports of all sorts.
Yeah, Qatar is an investor in one as well, and we are talking to multiple governments in the Middle East region who are interested in having one, on their home turf. I've gone to Qatar, I think, for the last 4 years, many, many times. Have a lot of great friends and a lot of love for Qatar. It's an incredible country, incredible history as well, what they did with the World Cup, they produced the greatest World Cup in history, the most watched World Cup in history. They really know what they're doing. I mean, the Qatar leadership is truly brilliant. Knock on wood, so we're going to be announcing something big relatively soon for the Middle East. But yes, I agree with you. The reason why the Middle East has become such a big future sports market is the Middle East governments understand that their dependence on oil and gas is going to run out in the next 20 to 30 years. They have to prepare their economies at scale for different industries. And sports is one of those industries that truly elevates a country. And that's why, again, we have Olympics, whatever, the World Cup, right? And you're able to use sports as a global soft power tool to pull in investors, tourism, to pull in industries, to pull in, you know, the labor market. It's a very, very powerful tool. And many Middle Eastern governments understand this, especially like in Qatar, right? For Qatar, it's an incredible story. There are only, 3 million people in the entire country of Qatar. And yet they hosted the world's largest sporting event, and made it the most successful in history. So this is not a one-and-done kind of thing. You're going to see a long-term trend of the major global sports properties, including one, being on ground with regional headquarters in the Middle East. I foresee that for all the major global sports properties. Yeah, it's a long-term trend that you will see. And it's both because of supply and demand coming from the fan base in the Middle East, demand coming from the governments, but supply meaning that, the global sports properties are looking towards Asia for its growth opportunities, whether it's China, whether it's India, whether it's the Middle East. A lot of American properties are looking to, expand horizons beyond the American borders.
Well, we're looking forward to that, Chatri, in the long term. In the short term, looking forward to May 5th for ONE Championship's debut here on U.S. soil in Denver, Colorado. This was great. Chatri Sichatang, CEO, founder of ONE Champ, joining us.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Eben. Take care, man.
Got to say, Eben, I wish I was in Colorado. You know, the former, what is it, roller derby arena. That's the tenant right now. But I would go check this out. Like I did, I checked out UFC at Prudential Center back in the day. I found issues with the live, like the people with cameras rolling around the ring. I couldn't see that much. It was almost like better to see it from home. I'm really interested to see how this goes and whether Chatri really played it safe on this one, but it pays dividends down the road.
We talk so much, Scott, about leagues like the NBA and NFL, which are very saturated in the U.S., thinking about their overseas potential. This is interesting to hear someone talk about a company that is very saturated in Asia, for example, now looking at breaking into the U.S., and I thought he did a very good job articulating why the U.S. market is so valuable, and also the way in which you approach it and how different it is from other parts of the world. So on May 5th, I believe, is the date. We'll see how event one goes, but he made it very clear ONE Championship is looking at the U.S. as a place to hold many events consistently month by month, not just one-offs.
And what did you learn from the podcast? There was one very important thing at the start.
Is it
remember
that he's a better promoter of ONE Championship than I am? Is that the that the lesson?
Well, I'm sorry. There were two things we learned. Two. One, yes, that he's much better than you. And two, that if you want to submit, you can cry mommy.
There you go. Yeah.
Very, very
not just uncle, mommy.
Not just uncle, but mommy also. He is, although you're mommy, I don't think she would come to your assistance.
Oh, no,
I
don't think she's doing the submissions. Yeah.
More to come. He is Evan Novi Williams on the Twitter at Novi_Williams. I am Scott Soschnick on the Twitter at Soschnick. Our producer is Matt Whitehurst. Thank you very much, Matt. Our digital media editor is Cora Veltman. She loves it when I remind you that the show can be found at Sporticast, which is the hub of what is the Sportico Media Network.